With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Honestly, like I think I'm friends with absolutely every single American player. I know a lot of the foreign players. Like, I'm on the advisory board, so a lot of girls can come up to me and feel like they can talk to me about whatever it is that they might be feeling. So that's really rewarding, especially because, you know, we're all trying to compete. So when they feel like that they can talk to me and all that stuff, and that's really great. And I think that there's definitely some camaraderie for sure.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It's this week's Beyond the Baseline SI Tennis Podcast. We have a player guest this week, Irina Falcone, an American who won the first title of her career last weekend in Bogota that coincided with an earthquake in Ecuador, her country of birth, just a few hundred miles away. So it was a busy week for her, and she has since flown to Madrid. So this will be a week she'll remember. She was kind enough to spend a half hour or so with us. Very entertaining conversation. Seems like the kind of person we would all want to be friends with. So let's go to her now in Madrid. Irina Falcone, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thanks. You are. We're getting you in Madrid. So you have many weeks to play in Europe. Good for you.
That's right. This is going to be the first one of the European swing. So I arrived yesterday. I was a little bit jet-lagged. I think I went to sleep at around 7:45 and slept for about 13 hours, so feeling much fresher today.
I need to sleep for 13 hours. You just won, we'll talk about it in a bit, you just won your first title a few days ago in Bogota. Did you get to go home, or did you go right to Europe from South America?
I did get to go home for about a week, and then I was off. Madrid starts on Friday here, so I wanted to really get that time change and get acclimatized and all that stuff. So yeah, it's we're here now, and hopefully we don't go for a while. I won't go back home for a while. That's what I mean.
I was gonna say the second week of the French Open is the second week of June. So if you went home about June 3rd, June 4th, that'd probably be good for you.
Yes, that would be really good.
So I was thinking before we called you up, I was thinking we've talked to rookies. We had Taylor Fritz maybe a few months ago. We've talked to veterans. We've talked to, you know, Agassi and retired players. Not a lot of players that were sort of right smack in the middle of their careers. You turned 26 in a few weeks.
In a week, yeah.
Happy birthday a little early. You could do worse than you could do worse than celebrating your birthday in Madrid. But what's it like? I mean, what's your existence like? Sort of, you're not necessarily the veteran thinking about what comes next, but you're not a rookie anymore. I mean, what's it like to be smack dab in the middle of a professional tennis career?
Yeah, I mean, this will be I think my sixth full year as a pro, and it's funny because a lot of people do consider me a veteran. And then there's some people that are like, oh, you know, you still have like 10 years on you because, you know, everyone's getting a little older and playing a little longer. So I think this is been a really interesting road because, you know, I've definitely had the ups and downs. I've had some success. I've had some, you know, dwindling roads where I don't even know how I'm going to come back. But I always manage. And, I mean, right now I'm feeling like really healthy. I'm really enjoying the game. Obviously winning does help, but Yeah, I mean, I think I'm definitely experienced, to say the least. You know, I've actually spoken with a few players, and they're constantly telling me, they're like, "Oh wow, we should hang out with you more. You know so much," and you know, they've been on the road and on the tour longer than me. So it goes to show that I do have some experience under my belt.
I was thinking too, you might get some years on the back end because you played college tennis too. We've been talking about the sort of the renaissance of college tennis in the men's game. You know, John Isner and Kevin Anderson sort of go down the list. We don't hear it as much in the women's game, but you are a college tennis veteran.
Right. I went to Georgia Tech for 2 years. Unfortunately, I decided to go pro after that, but I'll actually be finishing my degree online through Indiana University at the end of this year. So that's been something else, you know, to have to juggle along with a career. But, you know, there's definitely been quite a few girls that are really pursuing the pro life after college, which has been really exciting. You know, it gets us talking more about college tennis and how beneficial it can be.
I think we're going to claim you as an Indiana alum pretty soon. Is it the same program Venus did?
Correct.
That's great. Is that through the tour, or is that something you discovered online yourself?
It is through the tour. If you're a full member, if you're a player on the tour, you get 50% off. And then if you get a C or better, you can get 75% off your tuition. So that's a really good deal.
You don't even have to worry about getting up early for class.
That's always
75% off tuition. 75% off tuition is that's nothing to sneeze at. How did you end up at Georgia Tech?
Well, it's a bit of a funny story. When I was 16, I went with an old coach of mine and my best friend who actually went to UCLA. Her name is Nina Pantic, who's actually a writer for Tennis Magazine. We went and we visited Georgia Tech because my coach at the time, he's like, you know what, I want you girls to go and visit this campus. You know, they just won NCAAs, and I want you guys to decide whether or not college is the way you want to go, or do you want to go pro? Because I was in an environment at that time where college was just like, oh wow, you have really failed as a tennis player. So we were, you know, went into this college visit really not thinking much of it, but I met Brian Shelton at like 6:30 a.m. It was still dark outside, and we just pretty much talked a little bit about school. He talked to us about, you know, what it's like to be at Georgia Tech, and he went and went on with his life. I went on with my life, and you know, I thought, I was like, if I ever go to college, it's going to be with him. But that'll be down the road. I don't really want to go to college, blah, blah. Fast forward 10 months, I was playing in Houston against a college player at the time, Naz Morand, and we had, like, the craziest match ever. It was, like, 06-6-0, 06. And I lost the match. I called my mom. I was like, Mom, I'm going to college. Like, I'm done with this. So I talked to my friend Nina, and she's like, so what are you going to do? And I was like, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I'm going to write to a few schools. And she's like, what about Georgia Tech? And I was like, oh, I thought they were, like, all settled. I thought they had all their plays. And she's like, no, 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 Rebecca Marino has decided to go pro. So 5 minutes later, I sent an email to Brian Shelton. I was like, hey, coach, you know, I don't know if you remember me. My name is Irina, and I visited it your school last year, and I don't really know how this works, but I want to come to school, hopefully, in, you know, this coming semester, which is in 2 months, so let me know what you think, if you have a spot. And he responded literally 2 minutes later. He's like, okay, let's do it. You know, we have to get you accepted. We have to go through this process. We're going to have to hurry. And 2 months later, I was at Georgia Tech campus.
That's great. That's I just have Rebecca Marino, who you referenced, a former WTA player. Actually, a great story on her. She's now rowing. We'll post that when we post this podcast. We should also, Brian Shelton, the coach, was a credible, great ATP player for several years. I think in the late 80s and early 90s. So he was the coach that you ended up playing for at Georgia Tech for both years.
Yes, he was the coach, and yeah, he had a heck of a kick serve. I remember it just going over my head every single time we practiced together. But yeah, he's great. I'm actually still in contact with him. His family was in Miami and came and saw my matches during the Miami Open. So yeah, they're a fantastic family. He's a fantastic coach, and he's doing great things at the UF program right now for the men's team.
Irina Falcone, Chris Bosch, Calvin Johnson. Those are some Georgia Tech athletic alumni. Hey, everyone. The NFL draft is finally here, and SI has a new mini-series that takes you much deeper than any big board does. Listen to Draft Season. Each pick is a player. Each player has a story, and we tell those stories. The latest episode features former Penn State quarterback Christian Hackenberg, and depending on when you're listening to this, there may even be a newer version up, but these players talk about their experiences, the draft process, the meat market that is the combine. You can check their status, of course, on SI.com's draft board this weekend. Find Draft Season on iTunes, Google Play Music, or at SI.com/draftseason. What's your backstory? I mean, I feel like Mark Maron here. Like, what do your folks do? How'd you get into tennis? Where do you come from? Who are you?
Well, I was born in Ecuador.
Right.
And I don't know, I'm sure you've heard the earthquake that happened recently was actually in my hometown. It affected my childhood home, and my childhood home is destroyed now. It's no longer there. And when I was 3 years old, I moved to New York City with my parents, and we happened to find this apartment building in front of 9 public tennis courts in Inwood Park. And my dad taught himself how to play, taught my mom, taught my older sister who played at Brown University, and then he taught myself. And it just stuck. We went to practice every single day. You know, he would come from Connecticut every single day after hard days of work. He's a custom woodworker. And, you know, I would be dead tired from school, and he'd be like, let's go hit balls. And, you know, there was definitely a time in my life where I hated tennis and was like, I want nothing to do with it. And that was precisely when I was like around 14, you know, the epitome of being a teenager.
Right.
And he came to Florida. He went to Florida and was going to look, you know, for a new house for us and all that stuff. And in those 3 months that he went, I actually really found, you know, the love for the sport. I realized, I was like, wow, I really do enjoy doing this. And I would go and play every single day without him having to push me. And then we moved to Florida. We moved to Palm Beach, actually in Jupiter, Florida, about 10 minutes away from where Venus and Serena live. And I was in a public court, you know, once again, and this young boy, he happened to see me play. He's like, you know, you really should come to meet Brenda Schultz McCarthy. At the time, I didn't know she was a former top 10 player, and, you know, started hitting, and you know, she's like, all right, you know, you definitely should come and train with us. And so I did that for about 4 years, and like I said, we were going back and forth with going pro, do you go to college and all that stuff. And so I decided on the college route, and then went to Bryan, and then here I am.
Look at you now. You won your first title last week in Bogota, but you mentioned this already, that, you know, one country away, I don't know, a few hundred miles away, that was concurrent with an earthquake in your hometown. I imagine that was quite an emotional week you're coming off of right now.
Yeah, it was definitely something. The Saturday that it happened, you know, I get a text message from my mom. She's like, hey, quick question, has there been anything like anything that's happened today in Colombia? And she was referring to if maybe we got some sort of, you know, aftermath, or if the earthquake was big enough to reach Colombia. And I was like, no, what are you talking about? And she tried not to, you know, she didn't say much. She was like, oh, you know, there's just been an earthquake in Ecuador. And I didn't think much of it. And then after my semis match, you know, I found out, oh, there's, you know, more than 200 people dead. And, you know, I was worried because my dad was literally, like, driving towards that city. And I had plans for him to come to my finals match, but because the roads were so bad, it was going to be impossible for him to get there.
So your dad was pretty traumatic,
especially after the finals. You know, like the reporters are asking me, they're like, "So, what do you have to say, you know, to the people of Ecuador?" I'm like, "I'm not gonna say anything regarding my title. You know, my title seems so insignificant compared to what's going on over there." And granted, you know, you have to acknowledge that, you know, you did get a title, you did something really great, but at the end of the day, you know, there's so much other stuff happening in your hometown. So it was quite emotional, to say the least.
Is there anything more annoying than sports media members asking you ridiculous questions, trying to twin sports? It sounds like Draymond Green, and I don't know if you've seen that video, you're trying to twin human tragedy with hitting a ball over a net. But did you make it to, I know your dad was there. Did you end up eventually getting to Ecuador, or was it just too hard because of the roads?
No. I wanted my dad to come to Colombia to see my final, but I wasn't going to go to Ecuador just because I knew how bad everything was there. But thankfully, after the match and after I kept hearing more and more about it, I was like, you know, I have to do something. So I decided with my boyfriend to set up a GoFundMe account to raise money. And the goal was to get $5,000, and once we got that, I would match it with $5,000 of my own to help victims and families over there. And I think we're at like $4,400, so we're almost there. And it's been amazing to see, you know, the amount of people that have donated and have sent really great messages. You know, every little bit helps, and it's been really nice to see the outrage.
We will see to it you hit 5,000. We will guarantee that you hit 5,000. But did you also, I saw this on social media a few days ago, you were going to donate your racket and I think the shoes you were wearing on court,
yes,
when you won the title?
Correct. The person that donated the most was going to get my shoes and the rackets that I used when Bogota, yes.
Hey, everyone. On his podcast, On the Clock, Sports Illustrated's Chris Burke has been tracking the NFL draft every single week for the entire college and pro season. Now it is finally here. We have our six rounds of selections. It's all been leading up to this moment. For the hardcore draft fans, you can't miss these final episodes. Search for On the Clock on iTunes, Stitcher, and now on Google Play Music. You mentioned your boyfriend. How do you have one of those with the schedule you lead? How does that work exactly?
Well, it works really well when he's able to travel with me as much as he can. I've talked about him before in a sense that he just makes my life easier. If I have a hard day at practice, you know, I'll just text him and be like, okay, like, I'll be home and I'll be at the hotel in 15 minutes. And sure enough, you know, he's got my protein shake, you know, my recovery pants that I use, and like a bath running for me. So those kind of things, you know, they go a long way, especially when you're on the road so much. And if I'm home only like 15 weeks out of the year, you know, at any time I get to be with him, it really does help. And any time I get to be away from my family, you know, it kind of compensates that a little bit. So he's been a godsend for sure. And it's funny because today he's not here in Madrid right now. He's planning on coming soon, but I've already given him so much heck. I was like, you need to get your butt over here. Like, what are you doing?
We should add, too. I mean, he was an elite athlete as well, so he probably has a heightened sense of what you're going through physically and spiritually. Is he still competing as a boxer?
Yes. He's planning to have a few more fights, not too many. His goal is to be on the same card as his brother, who's undefeated right now. I told him that he has to plan it around to when I can actually come. During the European swing, it's kind of difficult.
I told him that he should try
and arrange, you know, Madison Square Garden during the U.S. Open, no problem.
that you could get to. Do you watch him fight? So easy. I can't imagine. We had Judy Murray on last week, and she was talking about how even at this stage in the game, it's hard for her to watch her kids. I could not imagine watching a family member compete in sports when there was an element of pain and violence. Can you watch him? Can you watch him fight, or are you just like, listen, text me when it's over?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not like most girls. I'm literally screaming and yelling and getting so pissed off while I'm on, like, ringside. Like, he had a fight in Miami once, and it was during the Miami Open. It was last year. And his coach and his trainer couldn't make it. So he had a buddy of his, and he had me be in the ring and help him, like, you know, with water and, like, toweling him off. And, you know, one of my favorite stories is, you know, he sits down, he looks at me, he's like, grab that towel, make sure you get the blood out of my face. I was like, oh, that's great. That's awesome. So, you know, I'm always going to remember it. But I've seen him, I saw him perform and win the biggest fight of his career, which was really a lot of fun. And it was the first time I'd ever seen him. So, at first I was a little, you know, nervous, you know, but after a while you just get into it and you just want to, you know, get up there and beat the crap out of the guy too.
Get the blood out of my face is not a refrain we hear when coaches visit the changeovers at WTA events.
Exactly.
So I was thinking one of the offshoots of this whole Maria Sharapova situation that came out was players commenting on, you know, did Sharapova in the locker room, and is she nice, and who says hi and who doesn't say hi, who's frosty and who's warm. And I'm curious, what is, in your estimation, especially as someone who's been to college and been part of a team, how do you describe sort of the locker room culture in tennis?
Well, for me, I mean, I think I'm, like, known as one of the most, you know, bubbly, I can talk to anyone kind of players on the tour. I've actually never really talked much with Maria. I think once, you know, I asked her if, you know, this water was hers because it was in the way. And that was about it.
But it's like a boxer.
Yeah, she just, you know, it's tough because, you know, she can come off as standoffish and all that stuff, but she just keeps to herself. And I still remember there was a reporter that asked her, like, you know, like, why doesn't she say hi, or like, why is she not friendly with the other girls in the tour? And she straight up told him, she's like, why would I want to be friends with people that are trying to beat me? So in a sense, like, I can understand where she's coming from, and some people can be offended, some people won't. Like, I really don't give it much time of day. There's just so much other stuff that I need to be worried about than whether or not Maria is
right. No, I don't mean specific to Maria. I just mean in general. I mean, are your friends tennis players? Do you are these adversaries? Are these colleagues? Like, I don't mean Maria specifically. I just mean in general. How do you describe,
I mean,
sort of the culture in the locker room?
Honestly, like, I think I'm friends with absolutely every single American player. I know a lot of the foreign players. Like, I'm on the advisory board, so a lot of girls can come up to me and feel like they can talk to me about whatever it is that they might be feeling. So that's really rewarding, especially because, you know, we're all trying to compete. So when they feel like that they can talk to me and all that stuff, and that's really great. And there's definitely a few girls, you know, who are really, really good friends off court. And then once we get on the court, you know, it's totally, you know, we're going to battle it out till the very last ball. And then at the end of it, you know, we give each other a hug, you know, grab a beer maybe the next day because it might still be fresh that day. So, I mean, I think that there's definitely some camaraderie for sure.
You ever think about playing for Ecuador? You know, the Olympics are coming up. They're obviously in South America. You ever think about competing for Ecuador? Had you thought about that earlier in your career?
You know, John, I've thought about it, but when I think of all the great stuff that playing for the U.S., when I think of all that, you know, I find it very hard to do, especially since I have given 6 years of my life playing for the U.S., you know. I can understand, you know, why some players would think it'd be, you know, fun to play for Ecuador because they really don't have anyone. So I for sure would play Olympics for Ecuador if I did I play for the U.S.
You seem very rational and down to earth, so I don't feel like I'm jinxing anything. You are on the verge of your career high ranking, which is mm-hmm. great. What's going to define success for you? I mean, this is a question I ask a lot of people in different contexts. I mean, what success mean to you? What's 2016 is going to be a successful year if blank happens?
Well, for me, specifically, I want to be healthy at the end of the year. I don't want to get to off season and feel like I'm just absolutely broken down and, you know, I'm not going to, like, I don't want to be not looking forward to the next year. I want to be, you know, healthy and still fresh even at the end of the year. I want to put over six figures away. You know, my sister is a financial advisor. So anytime I make a check, it goes to her, and I don't, out of sight, out of mind, so
go.
I don't see it, you know, as long as I know that my retirement's going to be taken care of, that's important. And last but not least, I mean, obviously my ranking, you know, that's all we really care about as tennis players, you know, ranking. So at the end of the year, you know, if I find the year top 50, I think that would be huge for me. That's always been the goal. You know, people always tell me, you know, when I hit my career high, they're like, oh, you're so close to top 50. You're almost there. You're practically there. You got this. And it's so much easier said than done. So, top 50 for sure. And then who knows? It's gravy from there. One good week, you can move into top 40, top 30, and then anything can happen.
You check the rankings, but you mentioned prize money too. I mean, is do you have financial stresses, or are you at the point where you can just sort of do your thing and figure the money takes care of itself, or are you looking at that prize money column along with your ranking?
I actually never look at the prize money column. It's only after I win a match that my boyfriend tells me how much I made. it's always nice to be able to get a win and get some cash for it. So I'm not complaining there.
We all like to be paid for our talents. What else? I don't know. I was reading your WTA bio, which always I find greatly amusing. The other thing too about those bios, people should know, is that sometimes they ask those questions when players are just starting out on tour, and then 10 years later they haven't been refreshed. So maybe Serena Williams' favorite movie is not anymore Silence of the Lambs. But anyway, I mean, yours was very entertaining. You like techno music. You like making movies. What else? I don't know. What else interests you? What else are you all about?
What else am I about? I'm a nerd. I'm very tech savvy. You know, I can build a website from scratch. When I was in sixth grade, I learned how to do coding. What else?
You're looking for an internship?
And killed it and was able to do really well with it and impressed some of my peers with some of my drawings. Didn't even know I had a talent for it. I have a really nice camera. I'm actually an avid photographer. I'm taking a photography class right now as an elective, so I'm learning a ton of that. So any chance I get, like whenever I go anywhere, I always have my camera with me because you never know what you can see with a lens.
Techno music still doing it for you? Was your media guide
bias?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I usually, especially now, like in the European swing,
I was gonna say,
techno
you could go
is
to,
really like the only thing you listen to over here.
You go to Ibiza.
And I love it. I mean, I'll crank it in the morning. I travel with a little speaker, so I'll crank it in the morning. And, you know, it really gets the juices going.
All right. This is great. Pleasure. I'm thinking a former athlete who knows coding and photography. If this tennis thing doesn't work out, we should talk. There may be a staff position here in the future.
I'm sure you probably have seen. I have blogged before for the New York Times. I have blogged for
WTA.
The Herald. No, it's not the Herald. Is it the Herald Sun for Australia?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That
yeah.
Sounds
yeah.
Right.
Right.
And what else? Yeah, I mean, I there's a lot more to me than meets the eye.
We like to hear that. Enjoying life. And on a serious note, we will be providing links to the GoFundMe account you set up for the earthquake in Ecuador last week. But this was a lot of fun. Go to see if you can duck away. You can take one of those little I forget the name of the airline. Take one of those value jet flights from Madrid to Ibiza for a night or two. You've earned it. You've earned it with your first WTA title. This was great. This is you're on the verge of a career high ranking, and early happy birthday. And with any luck, stay a few weeks in Europe. With any luck, second week of the French Open, we're going to be looking for you.
That's the goal. Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
All right. We'll talk soon. Good luck. Thanks, Arena.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. All right, that was Irina Falcone. Very nice to spend some time with her. We'll watch her results on the European clay stretch for the next few weeks, see if she can improve on her ranking, which is, again, on the verge of a career high. I'm John Wertheim. This is our producer, Jamie Lasanti. Thanks for listening. Send more suggestions. We have a non-tennis guest lined up for next week that we will announce when it's a little more official, but I think you'll have a good time with that one. Have a good week, everyone. We'll do it again in 7 days. Take care.